everybody. Steven Schleicher. I'd like to welcome you to a special episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast, one that I think we're going to call Marketing 101. Now, a few weeks ago, I wrote an article about a small publishers and how they might be able to promote themselves through this tough economic times. And immediately after it posted, I got a call from Boom Studios Marketing and Sales Director Chip Mosher, who said, "Hey, man, we need to do something." And he said, "We need to get a hold of Shannon Wheeler." And Shannon Wheeler, if you don't know that name, is the mind behind Too Much Coffee Man. That's appeared in newspapers, magazines, comic books. It's currently being released in graphic novel form from Dark Horse Comics, and there is the first omnibus edition that's going to be out real soon. Shannon is also a cartoonist for The New Yorker. So both of you, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I don't know where to begin. I mean, it's really kind of cool to have you on the show, Shannon, because here you've gone from doing your own thing to having one of the world's first comic book operas ever created.
No, I'm pretty sure it is actually it was the first. I do get that was the trailblazing on that one.
Well, you're not supposed to equivocate in marketing, Shannon. it's the first.
So
come on.
It is the first, yes. According to Wikipedia, absolutely, it is the first.
So
did you just change that before you got on the podcast today?
No, I have other people do that for me.
So Chip, as a marketing director and salesperson for Boom Studios, which is a really big up and coming publisher, what are things that people need to be thinking about?
Well, you know, I let me back up just a second and just talk about one of the reasons why I wanted I thought it would be cool to get Shannon on a podcast and stuff is one of the main reasons is I've known Shannon for almost 20 years now, and was living, you know, very close to him, sometimes, you know, 10 to 20 feet away from him during the time that Too Much Coffee Man was really hitting big. And, you know, I've really seen Shannon's career progress. And I think he is he's a great case study for how to do indie comics marketing right.
Okay.
And I really think, you know, he was really on the web, you know, before all the webcomic stuff has hit in the last couple of years. And I really thought it would just be fun to get him and I and you together and talking about, you know, what people can do, you know, marketing indie comic books, especially, you know, as Diamond has increased the benchmark for independent comic books.
Right.
You know, marketing has become, you know, just that much more important. And I think marketing's one of the things that is given, you know, it's just given short shrift, you know, in comic books in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really important. It's something that retailers, you know, complain about that publishers don't do. And without it, you're just, you know, there's just such a high signal to noise ratio.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of noise out there, and you really have to, you know, really from, you know, get out there and bang the drums to be heard and to get demand for your books. And so, you know, I just thought it'd be great to get Shannon on there and to talk about what he's done over the last 20 years and from, you know, his days of being a mini comics guy, back in the early 90s to, you know, doing cartoons for The New Yorker, you know, 18 years later, which I think is a phenomenal career trajectory for an independent comic book artist.
It certainly is. And I'm sure Shannon's face is all red and the check is in the mail. So
yeah.
Shannon, maybe you can start us off then. How did you first, if you're doing these mini comics, were you photocopying themselves and taking them to conventions? How were you first starting to promote Too Much Coffee Man?
Well, I mean, actually, Too Much Coffee Man started as promotion for another book where I had a little $5 book that I was selling through Blackbird Comics, mm-hmm. and that was a collection of newspaper strips that I'd done, and I thought, okay, here's a $5 book. What I need to do is sell something for a quarter or 75 cents, and then people will read that. And I'm at a comic book convention, and so I thought, oh, I need sort of a comic book character, and then they'll read this little thing, this little comic book, and then they'll come back and buy my book. And it sort of worked. But that's how Too Much Coffee Man started. I mean, except that people would read the mini comic of Too Much Coffee Man, the first one, and go, "Oh, this is great." And then come back and I'd say, "Oh, well, here's the book." And they'd say, "Oh, it's Too Much Coffee Man. Is this a Too Much Coffee Man book?" And I would say, "No, but it's the same humor. It's the same stuff, same ideas, you know." And they'd say, "Oh, well, when you get a Too Much Coffee Man book, then I'll buy that."
Oh, yeah.
And so that's when...
And thus the bane of your existence started.
Exactly. And it's, you know, definitely one of those things I can't complain about too much. Or I can complain, but I just seem like an ass.
But I mean, one of the things I remember, you know, because I was living down the street from you in Austin, and you know, your house, you had that cool dance, you know, turn of the century 1900s like dance studio.
Yeah,
it was all open spaced. What?
Yeah, 1890 actually. Yeah.
1890, yeah, it was really cool. And you had the wood stove and stuff, and it became sort of a focal point for a lot of the comic book creators in town. And everyone would hang at your house. And I just remember you know, once you got several of those mini comics out, you busted ass and would get on your bike and go to all the local stores in town and get them to carry your mini comic. And then you grew up in Berkeley and you were going back and forth from Austin and Berkeley and did the same thing in Berkeley. And you did that for a year. And I couldn't go anywhere in Austin without seeing the mini comic.
I really hustled it. I was photocopying them off originally, the mini comics, because those were selling like hotcakes. And then at some point I couldn't photocopy them. It was just a nightmare of photocopying. So I talked to a printer. I'd been working for a local printer who was mostly a poster artist printer. And he said, "Oh yeah, we could do up, you know, we could do a run of 2,000 of these or, 3,000 or blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Great." So what that meant, doing a run of 2,000, because of the size of the paper, it actually meant doing a run of 10,000.
Wow.
Because they were four up.
Did you have to staple those, or did he staple them?
Well, he was originally going to staple them, and he said that it would be a lot cheaper if I stapled them. And so
I think I remember stapling quite a few over at your place.
Yeah, the first run of 10,000, I stapled, and whoever would come over and, you know, I'd try to get them to staple as well. Sitting there with long reach manual staplers, and it was a nightmare. And I swore I'd never do
it again. Paint this white fence. It's so much fun.
And then I sold out of those, you know, like that was the 10,000 run. And so I did a second printing of 12,000, and I've sold out of those as well since. But yeah, it was a nightmare. But yeah, to save, you know, $50, I stapled, or got my friends to staple too, you know, all, you know, 22,000 of them.
Well, how do you go about then going from comic book store to comic book store, especially in the 90s, early 90s, going to these...
He wasn't going to comic book stores.
Oh, okay. Where were you going?
He was going to every shop in town.
Yeah, any place, because they were a comic book, so I'd hit a comic book store, but then I'd also go to a bookstore, I'd also go to coffee shops, I'd also go to any sort of knick-knack shop, that, like a card shop or something like that. Just any place I thought could sell it. And they were really cheap to make. And then so I just thought, okay, there's a lost leader. You know, it's just an investment. You know, so even if it's on consignment and I never get paid, it's still... But it was really important to me. It wasn't just promotion. It was like that they were being sold gave them a value, as opposed to, oh, let's just put this free thing out.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you pitch the store owner and say, "Can I put my product here?" When maybe, again, a comic book shop is probably at that time only interested in Marvel, DC, and Image, maybe Dark Horse.
In Berkeley, the shop there, they're very, very supportive of mini comics and independent stuff. And then it's just a matter of becoming friends with the people that own and run the shop, and just say, you know, then they're sympathetic and they want to help you out as a person. And so they'll sell your stuff. And then it's really apparent, too, when they don't want to help you because they take your stuff and they put it in some crappy location. It's a lot to do with placement and stuff. So,
like, where would you put it in these stores, or where would you hope that they were putting it? Right next to the cash register?
I would hand make. Yeah, that's the ideal place because they're tiny, so they're easy to steal. So the shop owner, if they're buying them, would have to put it kind of within eyesight. Mm. And then I would make a little stand for them as well. Just hand make a little thing and say, okay, here, you know, here's a 75-cent. And it was novel enough too that I got a lot of support.
It was awesome. And I remember in, it must have been, yeah, 93, like the winter of 93. I remember like that. I went to like, you know, just hanging out with new friends that I'd met at college and going to, you know, their places or whatever. And they all had the Too Much Coffee Man mini comic. And these weren't comic book readers. You know,
it had a crossover appeal. I mean, that was, I really lucked out. You know, Dan Sato called it lightning in a bottle. And yeah, it was just lucky. I mean, it was a nice.
Well, you know, the thing about, character. You know, the way I always define luck is when experience meets opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think you had a lot.
Too Much Coffee Man was kind of the end product of, I had done maybe 8 or 10 mini comics before that just were not selling. And I'd also done comic strips, and I was in the newspaper at the same time as Chris Ware and Robert Rodriguez and a bunch of other people that were really good. And so I would do a comic strip, and then I would meet people and say, oh, which comic strip do you do? And I'd try to explain it. And then they would say, oh, yeah, I think I know the talking dog. Yeah, I think I – so I would keep shifting the characters around until I found something that was iconic enough. So they go, oh, yeah, the guy with the coffee mug head. That's mm-hmm. right. And so it was just testing and playing with ideas until I found something that was like, okay, this is, people like this. And
well, what do you think is the appeal behind Too Much Coffee Man? Why was it such a big success in Berkeley and in Austin and then later everywhere else?
It was before the big coffee wave hit. Mm-hmm. And so I was a little bit ahead of the curve on that. It's irreverent. And at the time there was just so much serious stuff being put out that it was a nice counterpoint to this really grim, serious, you know, and then there's a lot of, autobiographical stuff, and I was making fun of that too. So it was kind of a counterpoint to that. It's friendly and accessible, so it isn't basing humor or a character on violence or sex. Mm-hmm. It's something that it's still sort of edgy, but it's not going to be offensive to, you know, you can give it to your kid. I think, you know, I use some swear words in there or something, but that's,
right.
that's relatively inoffensive.
Well, then how did you and Chip meet up? Did Chip just run into you at a store one day when you came in with a delivery?
We met at the Dallas Fantasy Fair summer of 1990.
How do you remember that, Jesus?
Because my mind is like a steel trap, Wheeler, and I know everything about you. And I keep it in a little black book.
Conventions, yeah.
Well, then, since you have such
when I was 13, I was at a comic book convention and met Bill Willingham. And sitting next to Bill was Martin Thomas, who colored my comic book Left on Mission nearly 20 years later. And Martin had moved from Houston to Austin. And so by the time I went to college in Austin, Martin and Shannon were hanging out, and Martin actually colored all the Too Much Coffee Man comic book covers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just networking through the comic book scene.
But then you started working, or did you volunteer, or did you start working for Shannon to help promote and sell Too Much Coffee Man?
You know, we were hanging out all the time. And so, just naturally, you know, Shannon and I would go out and have some beers and, you know, knock ideas back and forth. And, you know, I would, you know, I think I wrote a couple of press releases, you know, we knocked them back and forth every once in a while, and, you know, and there were
co-opted.
Some,
I would say we co-opted Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but one of the things I want to jump into, because I hope most of the listeners are familiar with Too Much Coffee Man. Maybe
right.
They're not. I think Too Much Coffee Man is ubiquitous now.
Well, if they're not, if there's not, like I said, there's that omnibus coming out. What is it? May?
Yes.
May from Dark Horse Comics, 400 pages.
Yeah. We'll have it this. We'll definitely have it with this San Diego.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah,
that's kind of the big release.
But it's in this month's solicitations. Orders are due from retailers next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So if you want it, get it in by March 31st.
Yep.
The one thing that Shannon jumped into was doing a lot of merchandise early on. And you had, Shannon, you did the coffee mugs that then you sold at the same shops, right?
Yeah.
And you did toilet paper. You did the toilet paper, and then you started doing the T-shirts, which then he built upon all these relationships. And what I find, you know, the three things that, you know, that I think you need to have to do good marketing is A, you need to be aggressive, and you just need to get out there and keep on pounding the pavement. And I think the second thing is you need to be a little shameless with your aggressiveness, because I think what trips most people up is they think that they're being too aggressive when they're usually not being aggressive enough, because there's such a high signal to noise ratio that just getting through to people is so hard that what you think is, you know, what you think maybe too much of a pitch or whatever, you know, on the other side isn't going to come through, you know? And so I think that's another key element. And then the third thing, and I think Shannon did this really well and got a lot of crap for it, which I find infinitely interesting, is you can't worry about people thinking that you're cool. And I think a lot of people, you know, are really have a lot invested in people thinking that they're cool, and that stops them from doing a good marketing. Now there's definitely, you know, a line of cheese that may not go with the product. You know, you don't want to cause any cognitive dissonance with your product. So if you have like a serious, like I did Left on Mission, which was a fairly serious, you know, serious, espionage book. And when the book came out, graphic novel came out, I came up with this marketing idea. I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll have this photo contest where people can dress up in the character, you know, and I was just like, wow, that is so not the book. And that's such a bad idea because it just doesn't go with the theme of the book, you know? And I can't believe I even let people know that I was thinking about doing that.
Well, with every good idea, there's bad ideas. You know, that's just the way it goes.
But but I think with Shannon, he started to do all these products that supported the comic book, and before, you know, one of the things that's really big now with all the web comics people is they're all doing products, and they're seeing that the product revenue stream as the thing that is making the money. And there was a big kerfuffle on the internet about 30 seconds ago, about, you know, hey, I'm a comic book artist, I'm not a merchandiser. And someone pointed out that, you know, that Charles Schulz made more money off of all his merchandise than he ever did doing the comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
And no one thinks less of Charles Schulz. But I think there's this thing where until you get to that Charles Schulz level, you know, people look down on you. At least in the 90s, people look down on you if you had merchandise. And I remember a lot of, like, the too cools for school indie crowd that I knew would always go, oh yeah, you know, Shannon, he's really great with that merchandise.
Well,
yeah, it was a total backhanded compliment.
Yeah, completely. And I thought it was to Shannon's credit that instead of going, oh, these guys don't think I'm cool anymore and I'm not going to do this, he doubled down and did even more merchandise.
So where did the idea of merchandising come from? Why did you just say, hey, here comes toilet paper, here comes coffee mugs?
I liked it. I mean, I thought it was funny. And then what I would do, I would, with each piece of merchandise, the rule of thumb that I have or had and still have on merchandise is that I want it to be this independent product. So if I'm doing a mug, I'm not trying to do it as a advertisement for the comic book. I'm trying to make a cool coffee mug.
Mm-hmm.
Or a t-shirt that is just legitimately an interesting t-shirt. The downside to that is that people will pick up the merchandise and never have read the comic book. And so they'll say, oh yeah, I have that coffee mug. I didn't know it was a comic book too. But I don't know. That's just another one of those things that you can't really complain about when you get right down to it.
Do you have a business, a marketing background? Isn't yours more in art and communication?
Architecture.
You went to architecture school, Wheeler.
UC Berkeley, thank you very much.
Well, then that's just kind of cool then that you've come up with this idea of why don't we marry my product with merchandise, or at least have them complement one another and make that a huge success at a time when, you're right, Chip, most people were kind of turning their noses up at the idea.
Yeah,
I
think most people have turned their noses up to merchandise until very recently, and I think Slave Labor Graphics has done a really good job doing a lot of tchotchkes and stuff like that. And I think it's becoming much more accepted than it was, you know, back then.
Well, as the economics get tight. I mean, it was when I was starting it, just thinking, how do I make a living off of this? And I'm going to invest $200 or $300 into producing coffee mugs. How do I make that not lose money for me? And so I'd always try to approach each little, you know, piece of crap thing that I was doing is like, I don't want to get a job. And so how do I do that so that I don't have to work?
Was there a tight timeline on all of this? Was it like the mini comics were coming out, you were getting them into other places, and then almost right away you had merchandise, or was this a multi-step, multi-year process?
It was all about the same time. It was like, oh, mini comics. Oh, let's just do coffee mugs at the same time.
Yeah, because the first mini comic was like in 93, right?
Yeah, maybe even earlier, actually. Probably, yeah, 90, yeah, 93.
End of 92, 93. Yeah. And then you did three or four mini comics?
Four mini comics. And then
I think the coffee mugs was just sort of a no brainer for you. And then the t-shirts. And then you started building relationships with these vendors that did this stuff, and you'd get these catalogs and you're like, oh, I could do toilet paper.
Yeah. Wayne Brenner. No, what was that guy's name? It was basically just a catalog guy and he would have weird stuff. And I would tell him, I'd call him up and chat with him, some guy in the Midwest, and just say, you know, hey, what are the weirder things that you have? And he would say, well, you know, I got sponges. Are you interested in sponges? And I'm like, yeah, I'd love sponges.
Oh, yeah, I remember the sponges.
Yeah.
That was funny.
A deck of cards I did. I mean, it was like, okay, here, you know, whatever weird thing that would come in front of me, I was like, oh, okay, you know, what's my investment? $200. Okay, I can afford $200. And then I would just do it.
Was there ever a concern? I mean, Chip said you kind of have to do it without worrying about what other people think. Did you ever go into the merchandising going, oh my God, I hope I sell these things, or these things are going to be a real dud?
That's why the toilet paper is harder to sell. But that's why I would only do merchandise that I really wanted around me. Like toilet paper, I figured I could always use that.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I don't sell it, then I have a coffee mug, right. Same thing.
Well, it's
then you have the most expensive toilet paper in the world.
There's no toilet paper too expensive when you need it, let me tell you.
It seems like the webcomic creators and maybe some other smaller creators, the things that they are putting out seem to be collected trades of their content, T-shirts,
right.
And maybe original art sometimes. Do
right.
creators need to be looking for other things besides T-shirts and plushies and collected trades?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even the toilet paper that was objectively less of a sales item than the other stuff, it still had cachet to it.
Mm-hmm.
At comic book conventions, people would see a giant mound of toilet paper and come over to check it out and then buy other stuff. So it acted.
And if people haven't seen the toilet paper, you have a design on the actual paper throughout the whole world.
Yeah. So that you're, and part, I was kind of curious what it would be like to wipe my butt with my own art. And I just thought, you know, this is going to be funny, you know? And then I, you know, doing it, I'm like, this is really kind of weird. I don't know how I feel about it, but
Wheeler's all about the secondary impact of the joke. It's toilet paper. Oh, but I'm wiping my ass with my own art. Yeah. It's always a secondary thing with you. It's always a secondary thing.
I like layers to, you know, everything has its layers.
It's never what it seems. So, yeah, no, I think that was an exciting time, and I'm really, you know, I just got back from WonderCon, excuse me, a couple of weeks ago, and there was a couple of booths, and I wish I remembered the person's name, you know, to give him a shout out, but the guy had little toys, he had these really cool books, he had incredible T-shirts, he had hoodies, you know, he just had a whole line around, you know, around what he was doing. He was a veritable P. Diddy of indie comics. That was bad.
I mean, that's like what products, like if you are doing T-shirts right now, everybody has T-shirts. And so that's really competitive.
Sure.
But if you want to do,
he had like a backpack that he did of his character and some other, like plush, he had like fur covered, like, you know, coloring books, you know, of his stuff, you know, he had this whole empire built around his work. And it was just ingenious and funny. And it's, you know, I remember going to San Diego in 90, you know, 90, whatever. And, you know, you were one of the only, you know, you were one of the only like independent cartoonists with their own merchandise line. You know,
yeah,
I think Kitchen Sink, you know, for independent publishers at that time, I think Kitchen Sink was really, you know, Dennis was really breaking ground with the chocolate bars and stuff back then.
The chocolate bars were great too. Another thing is to make sure you have quality, so that, like, he did chocolate bars, but that was good chocolate. He didn't mess around.
All the stuff that Dennis did was awesome. But I just think it's gratifying that we've gone from a place in the early 90s where people are dismissing you because you have merchandise, and to a place where, you know, I go to New York Comic Con and I sit down to eat and, you know, the tables are too crowded and I find myself across from a bunch of webcomics people and, you know, and they're really into their comic book, but they're also thinking about their business model and talking about their, you know, what kind of merchandise they're going to do. And, you know, and they're thinking about that, you know, and I think it's a real, you know, a real maturation in, you know, in the whole indie comic scene.
Well, let's talk conventions just really quickly. Obviously, if you're going to get out there and get your product known, you have to go to conventions. But how does an independent cartoonist decide which convention is best for him or her? I mean, obviously, San Diego is probably like this mecca of comic book marketing. But you would get so lost in the crowd with millions of people there. So how do you decide which ones are best for you?
Well, you start going to San Diego years and years ago, and you get that incredible table space right outside the front door. I hate you, Wheeler. I wish I had that table.
Yeah, that's taken some years of building up. And it is really competitive at San Diego. So for the cost, I don't even know if it's necessarily worth it, because there you're competing with multimedia giants. You know, you're going in there and they're putting out the new X-Men movie, and it's very hard to, you know, signal to noise, as Chip said. It's really hard to get above that din of everybody else's, you know, clamor. Something like the Ape is a lot better in ways. Stumptown is great. That's the one here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to Martin Thomas on the phone earlier today. He does a podcast now, League of Ordinary Gentlemen, for his movie review site, thespill.com. And Martin had this podcast of going to Staple in Austin, and that seemed like a great place to go to. I mean,
yeah,
if I was an indie comics creator right now, I would pick the bigger regional shows and build my audience that way before I would attempt San Diego
or New York or a WonderCon or anything like that.
New York is not so overly humongous where I think, you know, it's too much at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think when Reed moves into Chicago in October of 2010, that'll be a definitely a good show. But, you know, I think, you know, with San Diego, you know, I think you'd want to build something, you know, up and before you would premiere it there, because you're competing with other big company premieres, and it's just hard, where you could have the biggest, premiere, you know, in Staple, or, mm-hmm. or you could do something crazy at Heroes, or you could do something great at WonderCon, or you could do something great at Baltimore, you know, or Ape or SPX, you know, those shows. You could do something crazy.
Would it be better then to focus on going to shows that specialize in indie comics and indie creators, or would it be better to try to mix it up and try to get in some mainstream stuff as well?
What do you think, Shannon?
I do both, but it's kind of depressing to go to the mainstream shows for me, because I go there and people walk by and just sort of glance at your stuff and just go, oh, it's not Avengers.
Yeah, it doesn't have Wolverine on the cover.
Right, and so that's tough emotionally, but it's really good because then you're an alternative to all the stuff that's there. And so that's the minus is that people aren't really looking for your type of stuff. The plus is that you can stand out, and so that all the parents of the kids, where the parents bring the kids, they're like, they'll get hooked. I mean, having Too Much Coffee Man as a character, parents will look at it and just go, oh, this is interesting, and pick it up.
With Too Much Coffee Man, you know, you're superhero adjacent, at least.
Right.
You know, so going
that was real deliberate in terms of
just
marketing, where I thought I want to have a character that is appealing to people.
Oh, and you got total crap from the indie crowd for that too.
Yeah, for sure, because I was pandering, you know, or trying to sell comics as opposed to drawing sort of an unattractive version of myself and putting that on the cover.
Yeah,
well, that kind of brings up
a book.
That kind of brings up a good topic. Well, you know, you're ideally out there to sell your creation, right? So you're going to have to market. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, if you're just creating for an audience of one or two, is it worthwhile?
I don't think so. I've never been interested in doing anything that doesn't have an audience. But again, that's very anti-art, because if you're producing art, then you should be able to do something in the abstract that nobody ever sees, and it's still, you know, high art.
Mm-hmm.
That's always annoyed me. I hate high art. So.
Yeah, I've never been enamored of the attitude of, you know, going to a convention and setting up and then acting like you don't care whether people buy your stuff. And, you know, obviously you went to a convention, you bought the table, you printed out your comic books, and you obviously do give a hoot. But I think that's wrapped in a lot of, you know, just people being insecure about their art. And, you know, as someone who sat down for, you know, set their chair in a butt and written a script and stuff, you know, I'm always bummed out when I don't sell enough of my trades at the conventions, you know, and so I get that. But, I think you do. And then early on you did these one page strips, in the newspaper in Austin, in the Austin American mm-hmm. Statesman, for that excellent supplement. And then you started putting the pages up, like, you know, once you got a year done, you started putting them up like a page a week on your website. And this was, you know, sort of 5 to 6 years before the whole page a day craze in webcomics started. And that really grew.
Out there saying, you know, don't put your content up for free online, because then they'll never buy it. And I just thought, well, this is going to hit, you know, a new audience. It's gonna hook readers, and people that wouldn't buy it probably wouldn't have bought it anyways. And then I figured that would be compensated by people that, you know, getting a new group of people that would buy stuff, or maybe they would read the comics and then end up buying a coffee mug online. So I'd make my money just through the ancillary product,
which is basically the web comic, you know.
The paradigm, the
business model.
That
used it, So I honestly think that that's, you know, I think Shannon was doing a lot of really innovative stuff in the 90s. And, you know, and then you were publishing the Too Much Coffee Man comic book and also anthology called Jab. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite things that you did was during the whole variant craze in comics in the mid-90s, with Jab basically solicited as the bullet hole cover. When it was printed, go ahead, Shannon.
Oh, yeah, we just took every single comic book. I drove down with my truck down to San Antonio where the printer was and picked up all 3,000 comic books. Drove them back to Austin, and then we had little groups of us that would drive out into the country, and we shot every single comic book.
And then there was the powder burn variant, because that was the top one, and you'd bag that one. That was awesome. Who's 22 was it?
I think that was Aubrey's 22, and then we did the first 1500, and then it started raining incessantly. So I had.
For the second batch.
Oh God! I did them in the garage of my printer, because I was complaining to him and saying, "Hey, you know, we got to shoot these things, but it's raining." And he said, "Oh, just come do it in my garage."
Oh man!
And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Oh, I've got a 22. Just use this little, you know, here you go." And I said, "Yeah, but what about your neighbors?" He goes, "Oh, it's just a 22. It's a little pop gun. We'll put it on the radio. It'll be fine."
It's Texas. It shouldn't bother anybody.
And it did.
Yeah.
You know, that's an amazing thing.
Like, wow. And what's great is I looked for it on the internet, and I found it. I think I found it on mycomicshop.com, and it was like actual bullet hole. You know, this has actually been shot, you know, each copy is different. And what was funny is every story in the comic book, went around a bullet motif, you know, where the bullet hole was going through the middle of the story. So if we knew on the cover, like where to shoot the hole, so it would go through, you know, the right way. And so then, you know,
so you turn the page and there's a window breaking, you turn the page with the tire being blown out.
Oh, wow.
You turn the page and there's, I had an Elvis decanter being shot. I was going to have it be a Kennedy decanter, but I thought that was bad taste.
Well, then how did that go over? That must've been, again, considering all the, you know, the Gen 13 different variant covers that came out then, how well did this go over? Did people really say, wow, this is a different take on that?
Yeah, it tripled our sales, but wow. More importantly, it got us press. And then I used that right as we were getting all the press for that. That's when I solicited Too Much Coffee Man number one.
Ah.
And so
yeah.
It kind of springboarded my debut issue. And so I got to come out the gate with 10,000 sales on a basically an unheard of comic book.
And this is before Comic Book Resources and Newsarama.
Right.
I mean, this is when, you needed to get into, Comic Shop News and Comics Journal
mm-hmm.
and Wizard.
You made telephone calls. You had to go two longs and a short to call on the party line.
Yeah.
Too
thanks,
old of a joke.
Thanks. Wheeler, you're killing me. What else was around there? Comic Shop News. CBG, Comics, mm-hmm.
Comic Book Buyer's Guide.
Well, then how do you go about it?
Comic Buyer's Guide.
Chip, you said you did a couple press releases for Too Much Coffee Man, and back then things were so different as far as marketing, where you only had a couple of sources. How easy was it then to get these publications to take notice of you, your title, and say,
"Hey,
let's
shoot a comic book"?
Was that the way to do it?
You're a big idiot.
Yeah.
And sold it too. We said the dumbest gimmick ever. I mean, we were just like, we're going to be, this is a stupid trend. These little, gimmicks on the cover. So we're just going to out stupid everybody. And that's how we sold it. We're like,
wow.
This is not. We didn't try to be cool. We didn't try to. We're like, this is dumb. And we're gonna be dumber than everybody else, and then we would just take a joke and drive it into the ground so that not only would we sell the ones with 22s and we'd mark it up for the ones with powder burns, but we also had a 9mm version that would sell for $5, and then a 45 version that would sell for $7, and a shotgun issue which was guaranteed unreadable that we sold for $20. And that one came in a bag.
And how many of those did you sell?
I don't know, maybe two.
But so then that got you attention, and then you said the next month you solicited Too Much Coffee Man number one. How then did
right.
you go about getting into the distributors? How did you go about getting into, was it still Diamond just then, or were we still talking three or four different distributors?
Oh. It was 8 or 12 different distributors.
Okay.
It was Diamond
yeah.
and Capital.
But Diamond and Capital by then were the two dominant players.
And how
oh,
do you
yeah,
convince
totally.
Them to carry your book? Yeah, certainly you have to market to them.
That was just calling them up. Back then it was just becoming buddies with your sales rep and saying, hey, I've got this thing. And they'd say, okay, send us a cover. And you would solicit something before you'd written or drawn a single page of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would throw the cover in there with a little bit of text, and then you'd say, hey, could you please give us a spotlight or recommends or, and if they're little, guaranteed cool
cat.
Right, cool cat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the cool cat.
I remember that.
Was that drawn by Daniel Klaus?
yeah, I thought so, that was something that was very, very easy back then. And now I understand that you have to have 3 issues in the can before you even begin to talk to them, and they want to make sure that you're going to be steady.
Yeah, well, the new benchmark's 20. They won't put a PO if they don't want to carry the book unless it's going to reach a benchmark at 2,500 wholesale.
Right. So how do you do that? Do you just hope that it goes in there and hopefully 2,500 of the 200,000 people pick it up?
I think obviously, obviously right now, it's a bummer to a lot of people who are starting out as indie comic creators, but I also think, on the other hand, every problem is an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now, doing an independent comic book is probably one of the most exciting times I've seen since the black and white explosion in the 80s. I mean, the ability to download a WordPress install and download the Comic Press plugin
right.
and start putting up your book, you know, a page a day or 3 pages every week or 5 pages a week and promote it through, you know, online ads and going to the regional shows and selling t-shirts and doing whatever promotional ideas appropriate to your book, I think, that ability is pretty killer. Milton Gripe on ICV2, had an article with Phil Folio, and mm-hmm. Phil had a Girl Genius. Yep. It was a print comic book, and then it went to the web, mm-hmm. And he stopped doing the print monthlies, and he just went to the trades, and his trade sales went off the roof.
Yeah.
And, he has, what did he say in the article, 270,000 unique visitors.
Yep.
Approximately, and, his trade sales are, I think his initial orders are 10% of that. And which for a $15 trade or a $10 trade or whatever is pretty astounding. So people are reading for it for free online and then going and seeking out the collection. And I think if I was doing indie comics now, that would totally be the route I would go. I would definitely try to build a groundswell of support on the internet. And once you build in your audience, then you can make that $2,500 benchmark.
Mm-hmm. And we probably ought to cover that in a future episode where we talk specifically about, web comics and doing that. But Shannon, you'd agree that would be a great way to go?
Yeah, absolutely, that's the practical way. And then if you just look at it in the abstract and just basically what you're doing is the same thing that I was doing way back when, of just defining your core audience and defining, not defining, but collecting them.
Yeah.
and relying on them, and that's what you're doing as a creator, is you're reaching out to the people that like your stuff, and you just ask them, and you're just appreciative. You're saying, hey, could you please buy my stuff? And I'll be really thankful when you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same thing that people are doing now with webcomics. They're saying, oh, here's my stuff, and please, when you have the opportunity, throw $5 or $10 my way so that I can keep doing this. In principle, it's exactly the same. But the ground always changes. I mean, I was thinking about this as Chip was talking about the web marketing. When I was doing Too Much Coffee Man #1, as I was putting that out, everybody was telling me that it was the worst time possible to put out a comic book.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were saying that there are so many comics out that I was just going to be lost in the crowd. And everybody said,
it's always the worst time.
Exactly. Like every time, like this year is the worst year ever to put out an independent comic because Diamond is doing this and because the web is that and because, it's always bad and everybody's always looking for an excuse not to do it. And really, it's just a matter of jumping in and grabbing.
Yeah, you got to find an excuse to do it and damn the torpedoes.
Mm-hmm. What then, as we kind of wrap up here, what are some things or what's one or two things that you think people should be doing to help market their independent title that people are not doing? Something that is obvious that maybe people are missing out on.
Well, one, titles. I look at some of the titles and you can overcome a bad title, or sometimes a bad title becomes a good title because it's so odd and unique. But a lot of times I'll just read some of these titles and I'll just think, my God, I don't have any desire at all to check out that comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking to the guy that did Too Much Coffee Man. So I was definitely trying to do something where I would get a chuckle out of the title. I could have called it, Coffee Shop Blues and limited my audience by half.
Right.
I think. And so I think in this world right now, yeah, the title is even more important. And get a URL that's not where you're not sitting there going, city to city, and you have to, but it's the #2 and then an underscore and, just have something that you can actually say and people know. And then in merchandise too, don't do merchandise that is an advertisement. Have the advertisement for your comic be incidental to it being a good T-shirt? Like, I don't want to wear a T-shirt that just has somebody's URL on it. That's
right.
Just offensive to me. But if it's a cool drawing of a monkey, you know, I'll wear the hell out of that.
All right. I know what my next T-shirt's going to be. Monkeys.
It's got to be a cool monkey, though, with a symbol.
I just think there's if you can't figure out a cheap to free way to market your stuff on the internet, then you're not working hard enough.
Well, what are some examples are cheap to free? What are some examples?
Steven, let's turn the tables.
All right.
Let's turn the tables.
All right.
So you run a site.
Right.
And do you have ads on your site?
Yes, I do.
So why do you have ads on your site?
Well, because I'm trying to generate a little income to keep the lights on another month.
Okay. And to generate income, what do you need?
What do I need? I just need a space for people to say, hey, there's the space. And, of course, there needs to be an audience or traffic for people to come by and say, hey, I'm interested in what do I got out of it now?
What do you have to get? So you want to attract an audience?
Yeah, I need to have an audience built in.
Great. And so you have a comic book news site.
Right.
So what do you need to run to get that audience?
We need to run comic book news.
So everyone that's listening...
Yeah.
Guess what? Steven makes his money off running your news. If you have news, give it to Steven because he'll run it.
Right. And it turns around and makes people money. You know, that's one of the things that is really interesting. And I don't know, and you know, I'd like to think that Major Spoilers is such a big deal. But when Major Spoilers first started, I went out to try to get to publishers and saying, hey, send us your stuff. And I ran into this guy, Chip Mosher from Boom Studios. I'm like, hey, man, here's my little site. And he's like, hey, here's my stuff. Review it. Talk about it. Do whatever. And turns around, and we love the stuff coming from Boom. And so when stuff comes out, we're more than happy to run about it, or we're more than happy to read it and review it on the site. And I think
Steven's being too kind because I deluged him with stuff.
Every day it's another thing from Chip. But no, I mean, that's kind of, I think, important. So if
how many press releases did I do yesterday?
Like
oh,
three
Lord.
Or four, I think.
Sorry.
And that's not even close to what Marvel sends me. So
there you go. See, there's a bar for me to hit. If I can just get five press releases out a day.
There you go. And so I think that's a big deal for publishers or independent people to get out there. Find these sites that cater to your market and contact them. I mean, there's another one, She Buccaneer from, I think it's Great Big Comics is the publisher of that. They just came out and said, hey, would you please, if you get a moment, just take a look at this and see what you think. And I reviewed it and put it up on the site. And, you know, I'm sure that contributes to some sales, just like it does for Boom, just like it does for any other title that we review.
Sure.
Too much coffee. Don't forget Too Much Coffee Man Omnibus coming out next month.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, a lot of people don't know that Ross Ritchie, well, the co-founder and publisher at Boom, he started out in the marketing department at Malibu back in the 90s, you know, and I think, you know, he more than most publishers out there realizes the value of marketing. And I think, you know, he's been really kind in letting me sort of, wreak havoc, you know, here at Boom, in the marketing. And it's just been, completely 100% supportive on all the things, you know, all the crazy schemes that I come up with and that, you know, he and I both come up with and I take the ball and run with and, you know, like doing the day and date release of the comic books, you know, online for free
well,
and
I was
in
gonna,
stores.
I was going to mention that because that is a prime example where, Shannon, you're saying everyone's poo-pooing you for merchandising. Everyone just came down on Boom saying, how could you release this comic book free online on the same day it's in the stores? We'll never sell these in our comic book shop. And it had the exact opposite effect.
And not only did it have the exact opposite effect in Northwind, but, you know, by the end of the year, you know, we had it had an elevating effect on all our books. You know, it really got our brand out there in a way that we hadn't been before. And, you know, so it wasn't just that, you know, and having someone like Mark Wade as your editor in chief never hurts.
Well,
and,
that's true too.
You know, and you have to, you can't just be all marketing. You actually have to, you know, have a product that people like that is of some substance. That doesn't mean it has to be serious, but you know, it can't be, I mean, you can only sell a pet rock for so long. I'm very excited to be in the position where I'm in, where I get to have a book like, you know, Mark Wade's Irredeemable and come up with a crazy, you know, campaign, the Mark Wade is Evil campaign, and put up these ads everywhere that said Mark Wade is Evil, that link to markwadeisevil.com, and have no one know what the hell we're talking about
right.
for 2 weeks.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, yeah, I had an ad on your site,
yep.
Shannon, and that was fun. And all of a sudden, you know, everyone like realizes it's Mark Wade is Evil. Mark Wade is Irredeemable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the buzz on the book was great and the orders were high and, you know, it worked like a house on fire, you know, it was a hell of a lot of fun to do. You know, I was doing some ad buys at, you know, 11 o'clock at night with my laptop in my bed. My wife turns, you know, on a Saturday night, my wife turns to me and she's like, why are you working on a Saturday night? I'm like, yeah, I'm having fun.
That's true.
I'm going to sites and buying ads and putting Mark Wade is Evil everywhere on the internet. I'm having a good time, you know, and that's the best kind of job.
What about advertising in Wizard or other publications out there? Shannon, your thoughts on that? Did you do any advertising for Too Much Coffee Man, or did you just let word of mouth and your own presence take care of that?
Yes. Everybody called it guerrilla marketing is what I did. I was too cheap. I mean, I was too cheap or too poor to buy ads in Wizard. And so then basically what you're doing is you're buying an ad by creating content for them to talk about, like shooting a comic with a gun.
Right.
You're getting them content, and so you're still giving them something, and you're still paying for it. But it's just a different kind of exchange. Because you can do things that Marvel can't do.
Mm-hmm.
By just doing things that are funny or entertaining. But I mean, that's what I was thinking about with Chip when he's talking about his marketing, what he's done, and I've realized like this is what's really worked best for marketing. If you do want to market something, it's a matter of making something interesting and funny and or good, you know, in some way, so that you have to approach your marketing the same way that you approach your book and put some of the same thought into it, creative thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because that's
definitely
and that's what people a lot of times just don't want to do, or they find it, you know, advertising is a
crass
word. Yeah, yeah, and it is a little bit. I mean, absolutely. But it also is really fun and funny, and you can just put the same creativity into that you put into your book.
Right.
I think it pays off.
Well, I will,
doing Mark Wade is Evil ads is, you know, and T-shirts, you know, I would never categorize that as crass. I thought that was just the funniest thing. I will take full credit for that campaign to the end of my day. That was the funniest thing that I've ever come up with.
Well, especially when you can get Mark Wade himself wearing the shirt at a comic book store on comic book day when people are checking out.
Yeah, no, that was pretty awesome. That was pretty completely awesome. But yeah, I think as a coda on ads, most of the major, you know, comic book news sites are content driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think as an indie creator coming up, you know, if they need content, and so you can give them content without paying for it.
Right. And more than likely they're going to run it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's funny or good or interesting, yeah.
Well, one tip that Chip did give me, because I was using this one advertising site, Chip said, hey, don't just put a generic ad out if you're going to put an ad. Make it something that's marketing a particular product, like Irredeemable, or what was the one? What's the one with the little bear, Chip?
The Mr. Stuffins.
That one. You know, make it have something very specific in your ad, and make it funny, make it interesting, and you're going to have more people click through on that. And I've done that a little experiment myself in advertising the podcast, where I've got a very generic ad that doesn't get very many click throughs, but I run an ad that has a very sexy woman on it, and I'm talking about sex in comics. Holy crap! We almost tripled. We tripled our downloads from that.
No, I remember I saw your Stephen. I saw your first ad, and it was just it was your logo,
right.
And I was like, no one knows, no one who doesn't already know you is going to know what the hell Major Spoilers
is. Right.
You know, and then you and I talked, and then the next one was like, you know, and I could tell I was like, yeah, he got it,
right.
You know, awesome,
right. And so these kind of things.
That'll be a $500 consultant fee, Mr. Mr. Slugger.
Soon as we make $500, I'll be sure to send it your way. But really, it's just some of these simple.
Okay, I'm cheap. A beer at San Diego,
which is about $10.
Yeah. So I guess kind of the point in this first episode that we've done is really there are some very simple things you can do, and certainly looking at things like what Shannon has done and what Chip has done with Boom are things that people can start implementing right away. It's not anything that you have to think and ponder and waste a year of time trying to figure out how you're going to market your comic. Marketing's not that hard. Chip, do you have a marketing background? Is that your background?
Absolutely not. I went to film school.
Well, that's my background is television. And yeah. Shannon, you said yours was architecture. So here's three people that know nothing about marketing yet are giving you some good marketing ideas that have actually worked and are proven to work. So it's something to think about. Gentlemen, anything else you guys want to pitch or plug?
So, yeah, everyone, Shannon's stuff is magnificent and funny as all get out. And if you have missed any of his stuff over the last – what years does the omnibus include, 92 through
– Yeah, it's like the last 15 years of Too Much Coffee Man. It's comprehensive.
15 years of Too Much Coffee Man. If you have only gotten one issue or two issue here and there and have not experienced the whole Too Much Coffee Man oeuvre, is that how you pronounce
oeuvre.
It? Did I do that right? Oeuvre, thank you. As someone who was there during the creation of all that craziness, it's quite a sight to behold all in one place. Wheeler sent me a PDF recently, and it brought back many memories and was very, very funny. So definitely order it.
Beyond Too Much Coffee Man Omnibus and beyond The New Yorker, Shannon, where else can people find your stuff?
Website,
well, let's see, all that stuff.
Funny Times. My website of tmcm.com. I post a new cartoon there each week of just my new weekly. I'm still putting stuff out to alternative newspapers each week. And then The Onion, they just cut their cartoon page, but I was doing weekly strips for them. Hopefully there'll be enough of an uproar to bring back their comics page, because that was a blast. I just
from Mini Comics to The New Yorker, Shannon Wheeler, folks.
A profile in success.
Yeah, it can be done. If I can do it, anybody can do it. That's what I said.
Any comic success story, right here.
And Chip, where can people find out more about Boom Studios and what you guys
have coming
up? Just go to
boom-studios.com, and we just launched boom-kids.com,
yeah.
Which our kids line. Yesterday, we had the Muppet Show comic book and The Incredibles. Family Matters, number one in stores, and looked at the reorder activity and realized it was all sold out.
Wow.
pretty much the day before the books hit shelves. So we're really excited about that. And then April 1st, Irredeemable, Mark Waid's new superhero book's coming out,
mm-hmm.
and Cars number one. And Farscape's gone to like second and third printings on 1 through 3, and the fourth issue's coming out April 1st, and we got another Farscape series, and Mark Sable's Unthinkable is coming out in May, and we did a Altered Reality game this month with that, which we're just closing up, which has been fun as the promotion, and that book's going to be big, and Mark Waid's new book, The Unknown's, coming out. I have so much stuff going on, I don't sleep.
Obviously not. Well, gentlemen, thank you for this installment. Next time when we come back, let's kind of pick up and talk some more advanced marketing, because I'd like to hear more about what you did, Chip, with this promotion that just wrapped up, and Shannon, some of the things on how you jump from independent to being picked up by a bigger publisher.
Yeah,
we'll do. So this concludes Indie Comics Marketing 101. We'll do the two. What's the next class called, Shannon? Advanced Comics Marketing 201, 205.
There you go.
That would be like 205. Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit Major Spoilers at majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers and on MySpace at myspace.com/majorspoilers.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Wait, think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I bag and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the Middle East with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2009.